Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are. This week, Kelly Robinson is gone. What'll Scotty do? And what about the greatest American hero? The Secretary of Defense eases don't ask, don't tell rules regarding gays and lesbians serving in the military. And the percentage of Americans who now believe homosexuals should be allowed to serve openly is 69%. 69%. New unemployment claims are down for the past week, more than expected, and the so-called four-week moving average of new claims is down to its lowest point since September 2008. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez has caused the arrest of the owner of a private TV network in that country. Apparently, the charge was abusing the right to free speech, and apparently that consists of actually saying some things the administration disagreed with. Also in the news, 14 states are suing over the mandate for everyone to buy health insurance, arguing it's unconstitutional. Do they have a point? According to CNN, someone has actually made a bacon-flavored donut. Yum. New Jersey authorities arrested a teenager who announced a race check on a Walmart public address system. Father Murphy's in the news again. It was announced today that enough signatures had been collected on petitions to put a legalization of marijuana proposal before California voters later this year. This time, please be extra careful driving to your local polling place. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That would be me. All that, news of the weird, and our guest, City Council member Cecil Bothwell of Asheville, North Carolina, talking about how they tried to keep him off the council because of his religious beliefs. But first, if you have a website and you aren't blogging, you're missing the best thing you can do to drive eyeballs to your website and chase dollars to your bottom line. You can do it yourself for free, or you can have a professional writer do your blogging for you for under $100 a month. Go to jeffonblogging.blogspot.com and read all about the possibility of blogging. Again, that's jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. We're going to cover some of those news stories, and before we start with that, forgive the sound of paper rattling, but I'm busy rattling paper, which is why you hear that. You can reach us to talk about what's going on in the world of politics, healthcare, or talk to us about the views of our guest when he comes on. And you can do that by calling in to us at area code 347-994-3796. I'll repeat that, 347-994-3796. Of course, if you're listening to us in the archived edition of Speaking of Everything, we could speak with everything too, but it would be pointless. If you're listening to us in the archived edition, then of course calling in would likewise be a waste of your time. But if you are listening to us live on Thursday, you can feel free to call us at that number and ask questions, tell us your view, whatever you'd like. Talking about the headlines we covered at the very beginning, Kelly Robinson and the Greatest American Hero. Kelly Robinson was the name of the character played, as many of you will remember, by Robert Culp in the TV series I Spy. Actually, I shouldn't say many of you will remember. Probably most of you don't remember because it was a very long time ago. And I don't think they're even playing in reruns anymore, except they may do that now. Robert Culp was one of the two stars. The other was Bill Cosby. That was his first starring role on a TV series. And at the time, it was the first starring role for an African-American, obviously Bill Cosby, not Robert Culp, in a TV drama. And so it was a very big deal, and Robert Culp was the partner of Bill Cosby's character on that show. The Secretary of Defense, as I mentioned, has introduced new rules that they're going to be implementing requiring the beginning of an inquiry on whether someone should be discharged or brought to court-martial for either telling or displaying homosexual behavior. That's going to be determined by a higher-ranking officer in terms of determining whether that should take place. This is all in preparation for what everyone expects will occur eventually, or not very eventually, hopefully, which will be the elimination of the don't ask, don't tell, and just allowing gays and lesbians to serve openly in the military, as they do in most other countries. The unemployment claim is being down. Frankly, this is a surprise to me, and more importantly, to people who actually know what they're talking about. The reason it's a surprise is not that it's gone down. That was kind of expected. It went down more than expected. And the surprise is that unemployment, new claims at least, tend to keep going down, which is a good thing because when new jobs are produced, instead of jobs being lost, the new claims being lower, that will more quickly result in unemployment percentage going down. The unemployment percentage is still stuck around 9.7%. And the reason that can happen without new people claiming unemployment is because more and more people are always entering the job force. So if jobs remain the same, you're still going to have more people claiming unemployment compensation the first time, seeking unemployment compensation, but unemployment percentages won't move. That's just more of a statistical or mathematical anomaly than anything else. I want to talk in a moment about both the 14 states who are suing the federal government and about what's going on in Venezuela. But first, I wanted to cover some of the other stories. The New Jersey police, I don't remember what city it was in, but they have gone ahead and arrested. This happened earlier in the week since we've been gone. They arrested a teenager who had announced over the public address system in a Walmart store that all blacks were required to leave the store. What Walmart has done in response, appropriately, is to try to more closely limit access to the public address system in all of their stores so that people can't just get at them. Now if someone's going to make an announcement that all blacks have to leave the store, it'll be an employee. But that's the situation. Obviously, that won't happen. But that's what occurred. They have arrested someone. If, in fact, he is the guilty party, I don't know what the actual charge will be, but it will be interesting to see how that turns out. The reason we mentioned that Father Murphy is in the news again, a couple of weeks ago, Merlin Olsen, who had played the character Father Murphy in an episodic television show, a television series, had passed away. This week, there's a Father Murphy in the news, but it's obviously not the same Father Murphy, or the series would have been vastly different. This time, the reason Father Murphy is in the news at all is because the Pope, Benedictine the 16th, I hope, I'm being told by our vast studio audience that that was correct, thank you. The Pope, when he was a cardinal in Germany, was apparently in charge of, among other things, certain priests, and among those was a priest whose last name was Murphy, and he apparently admittedly, or it's been conclusively demonstrated, that as that when he was practicing as a priest, he had molested several boys who were deaf. There was a group of there's a temptation here to do a joke, but it's not funny, obviously. There were a number of deaf boys who this priest apparently molested, and the charge is that Cardinal Ratzenberger, which was the name of the Pope before he lost it by becoming the Pope, had chosen not to discipline that priest. And, of course, people are upset by that. The Vatican today came out with an assertion that there was no cover-up, and all the news reports are an attempt to smear the Pope. This is very much like Enron saying that all of the accounting scandals were merely slander. But that's what's going on. Whether or not the then-Cardinal, now the Pope, failed in his duties is something about which I don't know, but to say that these stories are coming out just as a way to smear the Pope is obviously inherently ridiculous. Wanted to invite your calls. In about 15 or 20 minutes, we'll be joined by Cecil Bothwell, a member of the City Council of Asheville, North Carolina, and we'll be talking about how they tried to keep him off of the City Council. after he was elected. We'll talk more about that, obviously, when he joins us. But if you would like to have a conversation before that, or if you wish to wait until after he joins us, in either case, you'll need our number. And that's 347-994-3796. That actually is an area code in the state of New York. So if you're in the state of New York in the 347 area code, it's a local call. Most people don't care about long-distance calls anymore, but if you're in New York State and you're in the 347 area code, you don't have to be concerned with it at all. California's Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen, announced today that the proposal to make marijuana legal for recreational purposes will, in fact, be on the ballot in California this year. They are going to be the first state to attempt that legalization, or to have that legalization on a ballot. There is some conflict here because federal law makes use of marijuana illegal. Last year, the Obama administration announced that they would not enforce the federal law in California or in any other state which had legalized medical marijuana. But, of course, state authorities now are enforcing to some degree the law, the local laws against marijuana possession, use, sale, etc. But California, if that ballot initiative passes, will no longer be involved in putting people in jail or fining them and wasting a lot of law enforcement time for the prosecution of marijuana use. Under the proposed law, one has to be over 21, can't smoke it in public, and there are certain other restrictions. But the essence of it is it'll be very much like alcohol, except that, I don't know that. I was going to say there may not be bars where you can go get a joint. But you'd have to go into a joint to get a joint. That would be kind of odd. The other items I wanted to spend a little more time with involved the mandate for people to buy health insurance as well as Hugo Chavez. But it appears we have a caller. And if this works, I'll be talking to him. Yes, hello. Are you there?
Hello, this is the Boogeyman. How are you doing?
Okay, Boogeyman. How are you doing?
Doing okay so far.
Yeah, good. You called me a number of months ago, didn't you?
It is possible. It's possible.
Okay, go ahead. What's on your mind tonight?
What is your take on the whole healthcare thing, Bill?
Well, actually, I think you may have asked the same question when you called several months ago. That's okay. My take on the healthcare situation is that the law they passed doesn't go nearly far enough. My opinion is that they should have had single payer like Medicare for all. I know you disagree with that.
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Then I misjudge. I'm sorry. You
must
also
be the wrong
think there
guy,
should be.
Yeah.
You must be the other boogeyman.
Are there two of us on here?
Apparently so.
Is he like a real conservative guy? Because I'm not a conservative guy.
Yes, he was.
Must be someone's stealing my name. Something impossible. Give me a bad rap.
Pause. That's right. Anyway, so tell me what you think about the healthcare.
I have no problem with the universal healthcare. It's just it seems like they kind of did it in an unhand, shitty type of way. You know what I mean?
All these. Say again. I couldn't hear you. Say it again.
It seems like they kind of did it under. Well, I might have a little problem with this one here. You know, because it seems like. They cut so many deals, you know what I mean?
Right.
They went out, Kucinich was totally against it, right? And then he's got a few words with Obama, right? And all of a sudden he's good with it. And you got that guy, Stupak, or Stupak, you know what I'm at, right?
Stupak.
That guy's totally stupid. He's totally against it, right, in every way. I mean, he hates it, right? Mm-hmm. A few words with Obama, and he's good with it, too. Something going on, you know what I mean? There's just something going on that doesn't smell right with that. Because these two guys are pretty adamant, also, about their points of view. They were going to change, and they changed, like, overnight, you know what I mean? So I think something going on is behind there. There's probably something in this bill, you know, that is not exactly what it was up to be. I mean, I would love to have a system just like the single payer type thing, which covered basically everybody, you know, and I have no problem with that at all.
Right.
It wouldn't bother me if every insurance company went out of business either, because I think they're all scum, you know.
I understand. Well, I have nothing against insurance companies per se. But I don't think that private insurance companies should be in the health business. when there was a debate about the health care reform package, people were saying you're going to let government bureaucrats decide what's covered and what's not. Today, health insurance company bureaucrats decide that, so I don't see much of a difference. Go ahead with what you're
saying. There's no difference. The same animal, different shell, right? Uh-huh. but in this one, okay, from my understanding, okay, these health companies, okay, they're going to get, you know, the government's going to buy the insurance from somebody, right? They're going to get it from the insurance company. I have no doubt in my mind that, in other words, the insurance companies, right, the ones who, I mean, because I think they are, from what I understand, also I read, you know, from different situations and blogging stuff, the insurance companies are going to make out like bandits on this because, you know what I mean, I think the government's going to basically buy the insurance from them, you know what I mean?
Well, actually, we don't have a situation where government's buying the insurance. But thanks very much for calling. I appreciate the call. Please join us again on another week and anytime you'd like.
You know, I thought, right, because yes. From what I've seen, like look, Medicare Advantage, right? That's, because, I mean, I know if it's going to Medicare, and basically it's, you know, it goes off a private plan that Medicare kind of pays for it. You know what I mean? They pay the insurance company, in other words, the different insurance company. So I really think that the insurance company is for, because they've got mandates and stuff like that. No, I would agree with you. I would like a single-payer system, you know, and like universal health type care, this whole,
right.
I have some problems with it. I really have some real problems with it, you know, the way it's set up to the best of my knowledge, because I don't understand everything about this bill. But
I understand that's the case. But listen, I have to run, but thanks very much for joining us, and do it again, okay?
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Boogeyman. Take care. Well, mine too. Bye-bye. Okay, if you would like to join us, let me give out the number. It's 347 area code, and it's 994-3796. And while we're waiting for a caller, and more importantly, while we're waiting for our guest to join us, let me go ahead and cover those two items we were talking about or start to. President of Venezuela is Hugo Chavez. During the Bush administration, Chavez was roundly criticized at every available opportunity. In fact, there is a pretty strong suggestion that a coup that was attempted and was unsuccessful in Venezuela was, if not actively supported, certainly applauded by the Bush administration. And I have, for a long time, been reluctant to say anything or feel anything negative about Chavez because of the feeling, I guess, that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. But Chavez has now gone over the line quite a bit, besides the fact that he's made some very strong anti-Semitic remarks and has actually taken on some anti-Semitic actions in Venezuela. He's also, to a large extent, attempted to suppress free speech. There's only one private television network left in Venezuela. Everything else is government-owned or government-controlled. And Chavez was admittedly elected, has been elected at least twice, perhaps more, and certainly should not have been the victim of a coup attempt. However, Chavez is no friend of democracy. He is abusing his powers and is attempting, as I said, to limit free speech. The owner of the network had come out saying some things against Chavez, not that he was a terrible person or that he should be booted out of office as such. I'm sure he has urged people to vote against Chavez. But he basically said that Chavez was acting inappropriately as president, which arguably is true, but even if it's not true, that's what free speech is. Free speech is not the right to say something that agrees with me. Free speech is the right to say something that people disagree with and in some cases find distasteful. I'll talk about a noted case that took place in this country a number of years ago for which the ACLU took a lot of abuse. The American Civil Liberties Union took a lot of abuse. But the point is, free speech means the right to speak and say things with which the majority disagree. That's not happening now in Venezuela. And the president of that country is attempting to, as I say, suppress it. So what's the conclusion? The conclusion is that maybe some of the things that are lousy that have been – let me try that again. Maybe some of the things that have been said about Chavez being less than a reputable character are true. And even though he is doing a number of things that are benefiting poor people there, and that's unquestioned, at the same time, he is many things, but someone who is in favor of liberty and democracy and free speech, he's not that. The case I was referring to a moment ago was the case that occurred in Skokie, Illinois. A number of years ago, the American Nazi Party wanted to have a march, ultimately did, have a march through Skokie. The fact that they wanted to have a march there was clearly provocative because Skokie at the time, I don't know if it still is, Skokie at the time was a largely Jewish town, and a number of people who lived there were Holocaust survivors, which tells you that it was a long time ago because there aren't that many Holocaust survivors still living. But that was the case. So the Nazi Party, the American Nazi Party, was clearly attempting to provoke a response, and they did. The people of Skokie tried a number of things to try to avoid or forbid the march from taking place. The American Civil Liberties Union, believing in the First Amendment, sued the city of Skokie, or the town of Skokie, and a court allowed the march to go forward. The ACLU took a lot of abuse, and among the reasons they took abuse is because a lot of their supporters, by no means all, but a lot of their supporters were Jewish. And when that took place, a number of them withdrew their support. Unfortunately, in that one regard, the ACLU was correct. Free speech requires that we allow people whose opinions we find distasteful to speak. Otherwise, it's not free speech. It's let us all agree. The health care reform bill, more correctly, the health care financing reform bill, passed on Sunday, as most of you know. And there are now 14 states whose attorney generals are suing because they believe that the federal government has no right to require individuals to buy or businesses to buy health insurance. They're saying it's unconstitutional. Question is, do they have a point? You're welcome to weigh in on that, and since our guest is likely to join us in a few minutes, you may want to do that next week. But outside the area of opinion, the big question is, if that's arguably unconstitutional, what part of the Constitution prohibits it? I haven't been able to find any place. The one thing that relates to it is that a number of years ago, the Supreme Court ruled that the United States government could not become involved in stopping a contract between two parties who have the right to contract, but that's not what we're talking about. We are talking about the fact that the legislation requires everyone essentially to buy health insurance after a couple of years from now. You don't have to do it now. And if you have an income of under $88,000, I believe the number is, the government will subsidize you in the form of tax credits so you can afford to get health insurance, or afford it better anyway. And employers who have 50 or more employees are required to get insurance for their employees or pay a fine. The argument is that the federal government has no right to order you to pay for insurance if you don't want it. The argument being that there are people who are 20 and 21 and 22 who are healthy and don't want to spend the money, and why should the government force them to do it, or why should the government be able to force them to do it? I have not heard a single argument with regard to where in the Constitution would prohibit such a thing. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm just saying they haven't enunciated that terribly clearly. Before we have Cecil Bothwell join us, let me also go ahead and move to some news of the weird. This first story I frankly find hard to believe, but someone is working, some company is working on a video game which will be based on the life of Michael Jackson. That should be enough of a humorous remark, but that's a statement. Now, so far there's no word on within the game how many young boys sleep over how often or what a player has to do to win the game, and it kind of beggars the imagination. Very strange story. Also, in news. By the way, when we talk about News of the Weird, we're talking about a website, and you can go to that website and find these stories and many others yourself. It's called newsoftheweird.com. Very funny site. There's some video there, lots of other things. I think you'll enjoy it. In the category of natural selection, the story was reported that female cane toads are choosy when it comes to mating. This was in the from an article in the journal Biology Letters. Within that species, a desirable male is permitted to hop onto the female's back and start the process of mating, but the female is also able to inflate sacs in her body to bloat herself so large that males slide off before completing the act. Now, apparently, this is because it's more difficult for the females to otherwise communicate the message that no means no, and it is also the manner by which the creation takes place of horny toads. Okay. Let me mention the number again. We do have one other story. Let me mention the number. It's 347-994-3796. And in a minute, you'll be able to join us with our guest, Cecil Bothwell, who, if I'm reading our switchboard right, is about to join us. Cecil, are you there? Hello? Okay, that worked well. Let me try it again. The switchboard didn't want to take this. Hello? Are you there? There we go. There you are.
Yeah.
We had a wonderful technical glitch. How are you, Cecil?
I'm fine and well used to technical glitches.
Yeah, I understand. Well, let me introduce you properly here.
Okay.
Cecil Bothwell is a member of the City Council of Asheville, North Carolina, and after being elected to the City Council, there were efforts to keep him from taking his seat. We'll talk about that in a minute, but he is also an investigative reporter and biographer. He's received national awards from the Association of Alternative News Weekly and the Society of Professional Journalists for Investigative Reporting. He's written a number of books. He's the former news editor of the Asheville City Paper, and he gives talks around the country on a variety of subjects, including woo-woo versus the bunny hug, will we be saved by faith or works, and swallowing whales, what Jonah can teach us about belief. We may get a chance to talk about that, but if we don't, at some other point, I'm dying to know about that.
In the meantime, tell
us why it was that they tried to keep you off the city council. What's so terrible about you? You must have committed some terrible crime or had relationships with small farm animals or something. What was the reason for them keeping you off?
Well, my relationship with small farm animals is pretty benign. And I named all of them. But in terms of the city council, I can tell more of the story. I can go back on the story, but the key is that the North Carolina Constitution contains a clause that says that no one can hold office in North Carolina, quote, who shall deny the being of Almighty God, close quote. And my opponents construed a comment I had made in the acknowledgments of a book I wrote a couple of years ago to mean that I had denied the being of Almighty God. And so they tried to enforce that bit of the Constitution. Of course, that kind of archaic piece of the North Carolina Constitution is not enforceable under the U.S. Constitution, which prohibits a religious test for holding office. And, of course, the U.S. Constitution supersedes any state's constitution.
Ever since the 14th Amendment?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Which was right after the Civil War, for those of you who aren't following the history of our country. Go ahead, Cecil.
Right. What had happened further back was that when I wrote a critical biography of Billy Graham, really a political biography. I wasn't taking particular issue with Billy Graham's religiosity or his beliefs. What I was questioning and which I reported on was his political advice to presidents from Harry Truman forward.
Right.
But when I wrote the book, I realized when it was published that people would assume that I had bad intent toward either Billy Graham or religion. And
right. So
in the afterword to the book, it was acknowledgments at the back end, I said, I know that having published this, some will say that I'm Satan's helper or worse. And for the record, I don't believe in supernatural beings of any stripe. So that disbelief in supernatural beings of any stripe was their key to claiming that I was denying the being of Almighty God.
Okay. So, and as a result of that, what did they do? Did they file a lawsuit?
No,
keep
they
you off?
Threatened. No,
they threatened
a lawsuit.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. And that's where the story begins to, well, yeah, that's one point at which the story is quite humorous. The person who sort of stoked the fire of opposition to me is a guy named Kirk Lyons, who's head of the Sons of the Confederacy.
Now, yeah.
As you might guess from the name, the Sons of the Confederacy is just that, and they believe that they didn't lose the war,
it was just bad press.
Bad press, right?
Yeah.
And they're a thinly veiled white supremacy group.
Right.
They're here locally. There seem to be, or at least there are many allegations of ties to the KKK.
Right.
So they're fringy. Well, he was the guy who pushed the issue, but the one who brought it to the fore was a fellow named H.K. Edgerton.
Mm-hmm.
Now, H.K. is an African-American gentleman, and normally I don't think that race is of much interest in political issues, but in this case, I think it's worth mentioning because he was formerly head of the NAACP in our region, and was drummed out for some reason. I don't know that inside story, but after being drummed out of the NAACP, he joined the Sons of the Confederacy and runs around Asheville, North Carolina, in Confederate drag, in the Confederate uniform.
I don't think they'd appreciate having it referred to as Confederate drag, but I take your point.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yes, in the official uniform of the Confederate Army, and carrying the stars and bars, he poses on bridges over the interstate and that sort of thing. In fact, he stands. The bridges over the interstate in town are over the Billy Graham Freeway.
Okay. Yeah.
He claims that slavery was a benign partnership between blacks and whites. So
this is the former head of the NAACP.
Yeah. And his father was a minister, and so he claimed that my induction into office was an affront to his Christian father. And so he's the one who brought the issue forward. He contacted the Attorney General of the state and the city attorney here in Asheville and tried to block my induction into office and was unsuccessful because of the constitutional protections. Then when I was inducted, I affirmed. That is, I affirmed that I would uphold the Constitution and so forth. I didn't swear on a Bible.
Right.
And as a result of that, he claimed he was going to stage a citizen's arrest of all of the other council members because they were doing business with me and that I didn't have any right to be, seated on council. But in fact, no lawsuit was actually filed,
and no citizen's arrest took place.
No, no. And so far, it seems to be a good bit of hot air.
Yeah, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there is, and I agree with you. Most of the time, race is a non-issue. But there is a gentleman. I don't know if he's still living. My knowledge of him was a number of years ago. Who was African American, and if memory serves, his name was Ward Connerly, and he sponsored a ballot initiative in California and has and did so subsequently in other states to do away with affirmative action, all laws related to affirmative action within the state, you know, favoring affirmative mm-hmm. action. And it seems that there is a, what's the word I'm looking for, a trend, that may be the wrong word, but there is a, an inclination of groups that want those kinds of legislation passed or the kind of activity undertaken that you've described, which would normally be done by people who are white and antagonistic to African Americans, to have it fronted, if you will, by an African American.
I believe that, yeah.
Yeah.
I can imagine. I mean, and again, it paints it in a different way.
They
can find someone, you know, an African American to stand up for that. And
yeah, like, look, Martha, even the black guy's against this thing, you know, that kind of thing.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And HK is a very kindly man. He's not a mm-hmm. an aggressive guy. He keeps up the Confederate cemetery here in Asheville.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if people in Arizona would be as familiar that many of the former Confederate states, in our cemeteries, there are specific sections where Confederate
yeah.
soldiers were buried and so forth.
And
yet he seems it's kind of weird. He's got a he formed a nonprofit group to support his work. Apart from the Sons of the Confederacy, called Southern Heritage 411, and it shares an address in Georgia with a slanderously vicious printing company that does racist bumper stickers and stuff.
Very strange.
Very strange.
Yeah. Well, you know, and
like Austin,
you know,
Texas, we try to keep this town weird, and he helps.
And are succeeding. Isn't Asheville, this is a complete departure, but isn't Asheville the town, or that was Henderson, wasn't it? I was going to say the town where Mother Earth News started, was that Henderson or Asheville?
It's in Hendersonville, about 25 miles south of here,
okay.
The Mother Earth Village, and
right.
And many of the Mother Earthers are still active here in various fashions. One of the leading lights there now runs a thing called the Southern Energy and Environment Expo each year,
which
is the largest energy and environment expo in the East, I know of anyway.
Uh-huh.
And extolling or highlighting alternative energy systems, you know, home insulation, alternative vehicles, and stuff like that. So there are Mother Earthers who are still active. Really
as a side note, I think I've got issue number 4 in my file cabinet. So that'll tell you how long I've been doing that.
I used to have stacks of them.
And then your mother threw them away along with your comic books. I was going to ask you, because you never really touched on it, so let me touch upon it. When you had talked about the fact that someone glommed onto something in your book for the premise that you are, in fact, not a believer in a supreme being. You really aren't, correct?
I'm not, right.
Yeah.
But I had never thought of it as being of much relevance to running for office.
And not in this country.
Right.
Yeah.
It oughtn't to be, anyway.
Right.
But there are 7 states, I think, that still have similar clauses in their constitutions. And although at least in a couple of them there have been lawsuits that have found against it, North Carolina and a few others it's never been taken to court. And the way law works, until either you remove it from a constitution through maybe a constitutional convention, or until there's a lawsuit which negates it, those things remain on the books.
Sure. Yeah, unless a court rules that they are unconstitutional by reason of, as you said, the United States Constitution, then it remains
right.
part of that Constitution. And in some cases, it may not be a matter of Constitution. It may just be a matter of legislation, but the same thing. Until it's changed by legislation or, in the case of a constitutional amendment, by whatever amendment process that state's Constitution provides,
right.
or a court overrules it, it's there. It's sitting there. It's kind of a dead letter, but it's there.
Exactly.
And, you know, and that may,
yeah,
of course... Go ahead.
Well, in some places, down just south of us in South Carolina, a fellow named Herb Silverman went to test the law, I think more than a dozen years ago, maybe 18 years. It's quite a while back. He tried to obtain a notary public license as a professed atheist. And that case dragged on for 9 years in the courts there before it was settled in his favor. I mean, so had these people pushed forward, or if they still do, which they could, I mean, nothing prevents someone from filing a lawsuit.
That's true.
It's conceivable that something similar could happen here, but for now, at least they've subsided.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of like a fait accompli in the sense that you are sitting on the council. Is your city council a full-time body, or is it just does it just meet for several months a year or once a week, or what kind of city council is it?
I hoped it was a half-time job when I was elected, but it's about a three-quarter time. We have meetings, formal meetings, every other week, but we have committee meetings, subcommittee meetings between times, and each of us on the council are liaisons to about eight boards or commissions which meet monthly. So there's a lot of, I mean, this week, looking at my calendar in front of me right now, I've been to this week 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 meetings already this week, and I have 3 meetings tomorrow.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's a fairly activist, and some of these are meetings I could skip if I felt I didn't. I mean, they aren't absolutely obligatory, but on the other hand, it's part of being engaged with the community. You know, there's people who want to connect with the city council. So it's more or less a half-time job, and it's three-quarter because I'm
diligent.
Going to meetings, trying to be an activist.
That's great. And how many members of the council are there?
7. We have a mayor and 6 members. We have a weak mayor system in that the mayor is although a titular mayor, she has 1 vote. I mean, there are 7 votes. So,
right, she's the ceremonial head of the city and may lead city council meetings, but most of the work done by strong mayor in a strong mayor system, I assume, is done by a city manager.
Right.
Okay. I was a poli sci major.
Aha.
Oh. Uh-oh. That's
right. Poli sci. Oh no.
Yeah, not a good thing. No.
Right, I was a reporter for 18 years before I decided to run for office, so I have...
Talk about being suspicious.
Roots.
That's right. Well, talk to me about what you're doing now besides city council work, and of course, radio interviews, but are you still acting as a journalist? When I say acting, do you still work as a journalist?
Not as an employed... For many years there, I was freelance and then full time as a reporter and editor. Now I'm no longer with a news outlet. You can't be a professional journalist, like a reporter, and be in government. I mean, there's a clear conflict there. It's one or the other.
Oh, that's true. If you're writing for somebody local. That would certainly be true,
Well, sure. I guess, that could be if I had the luck to score a column with the New York Times, I suppose I could do that.
Sure.
Be councilman.
Well, as a matter of fact, the call is coming in right now from Tom Friedman. He's asked me to talk to you about that. But go ahead.
All right.
So what is it you are doing besides city council work?
I am continuing my writing career. I had my previous 2 books, were both biographies, one of Billy Graham, published in 2007, which is the only critical biography of Billy Graham that I'm aware of, certainly the only political criticism that he's enjoyed. And then in 2008, I published a retrospective look at a sheriff that I had been investigating here for... about 6 years, and who my reporting helped put him in prison for 15 years.
What had he done?
Extortion, money laundering, mail fraud, and illegal gambling. He basically organized gambling throughout the county and was extorting small businesses who had video poker machines in their on their premises. And he
wow.
would even extort them to place video poker machines on their premises, which he then would extort money from. Video poker here was legal here during those years. And
okay.
he was the sheriff for 12 years. And the three terms, we have four-year terms
mm-hmm.
of sheriffs here. And under the law, video poker could pay off $10 in merchandise per day per customer.
Okay.
So you could win a plush bunny or
yeah.
a tank full of gas or something. But
right.
the operators were routinely paying off thousands of dollars to some winners.
Wow.
Which is what encourages people to keep playing, of course.
Sure, absolutely.
Thousands of dollars to a very few winners.
Right.
But in order to protect that racket, the sheriff was
They had to pay off the sheriff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so they could. So I wrote that book. And then I started another book before I ran for office. And I really ran for city council through most of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
But I finished that book after winning the election, and that's just out now.
And it's called?
Whale Falls, An Exploration of Belief and Its Consequences. And it's kind of interesting to me that although I hadn't raised the issue myself about my beliefs, I was writing about it when all this stuff blew up.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
It's like someone was getting a whiff of it before you intended to let it out.
Right. And I suppose, I mean, you know, although on the one hand I didn't intend to bring it out during the election, I haven't shied away from what
right.
my beliefs are. And so anyway, that book's just out of a couple of weeks now. And
the next obvious question is, with regard to all three of those books, if someone were interested in obtaining one or two or three of them, where would they go? I assume there's a website, and is it available at places like Barnes & Noble and Amazon?
Yes, it's online. If you Google my name, Cecil, C-E-C-I-L, Bothwell, B-O-T-H-W-E-L-L, you'll find links to
okay.
my writing and the news and so forth. If you pull it on Amazon, that would direct you to my books. If you wanted to buy the book directly from my publishing company, BraveUlysses.com.
And let me say that again in case you haven't heard. That's Brave, B-R-A-V-E, Ulysses, U-L-Y-S-S-E-S, .com.
Great.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
But any which way, I'm not hard to find. In fact, during that class, kind of interesting, I mean, you know, nothing came of their challenge to me. I mean,
right.
I was sworn in, I took office. But the news of that challenge went global in December. During the third week of December, I Googled myself. I'm not ashamed to admit that.
No. Who doesn't do that?
Right. I pulled up over 500,000 hits.
Yeah.
I mean, the story really went global. I saw it in 8 languages.
Wow.
I was interviewed by Russia Today on Moscow TV.
How funny.
Rachel Maddow, Bill
yeah.
Press interviewed me. A number of other shows across
Senator Al Franken
radio shows. I was on Al Franken actually before all this happened, but
yes.
back
oh, okay.
you know, before he was elected, because
obviously, yeah,
you know, when he was on the Air America show,
right?
But anyway, I mean, my story, I tell people it was a lot like watching your own funeral because I had really nothing to do with it, but it was
right.
about me.
Yeah, it was. Yes, that's true. It was, and it was also kind of the kind of thing that. Everybody was acting around you and about you, and
right.
not only did you have no control, but you had very little input.
Right. I mean, I didn't kick up the story. You know, I was sort of, I felt like an innocent bystander. And yet,
yeah.
you know, you never know where your 15 minutes are going to come from. And
yeah. That's right. Yeah,
or 15 megabytes or whatever.
As the case may be. Yeah, I was just going to say to you, you know, about what you were talking about, you Googled your own name. There's a phrase for that now. I don't know if you're aware of it.
No.
And that's called a vanity search.
A vanity search?
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when I say we've all done it, okay, that may be a projection. I certainly have gone ahead and Googled myself. Yeah.
Yeah, during that period, I found that you can put a Google alert on anything.
Sure, that's right.
You can put it on, you know, Sailfish or whatever.
Yeah.
But I put myself on a Google alert, and I've left it there because now that I'm in office, I am curious what the news reports are about me as far as what I'm doing in council.
Mm-hmm.
To see how my work is being portrayed. And although the international story has settled at this point.
Right.
I still leave it on because every day I get an update and it points out that if I'm being, you know, how my work is being reported.
And
it's vanity. Yeah. Partly it's vanity, but it's also keeping track of how my work is being reported. And
sure.
That to me is a valid piece of my work right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, it also affects what you're able to accomplish in terms of your role.
Right, right. Huh. And of course, I also go in, every so often and check my rankings on Amazon to see how my book is doing.
Of course. Well, that's a different aspect. That's less vanity and more pecuniary, but nonetheless important.
I've heard that some authors check that every 15 minutes too. So.
I wouldn't be at all surprised. So how long is the term of the city council in Asheville?
It's a 4-year term. Half the council is elected every 2 years, so we it's staggered. You know, only half of us are up
right.
for election to provide, I guess, some sense of continuity and also
right.
to keep us from running all the time. Until 1998, the council here was all members were elected every 2 years.
Crazy.
And it was just like Congress. All people did was run for office.
Sure.
I would very much support the idea of switching Congress to 4-year terms, the House of Representatives.
Let's
not always be running for office. Let's, you know, maybe we could buckle down and actually work.
Yeah, well, actually, we probably don't have enough time to discuss all of the elements of that, but there are actually other ways to do that, and I know you're aware of some of them, besides the possibility of public financing. Which is
right.
which would eliminate the need to always. The reason people are always running isn't because they're always running; it's because they're always fundraising,
right.
typically. And the other way to.
That's something I'm working on here. Yeah, public financing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Any chance of it actually happening?
Yeah, one city in North Carolina. North Carolina is a what they call a Mother May I state.
Okay.
We are strongly controlled by the state government.
Okay.
So we need permission from the state to do almost anything of substance at the city level.
Right.
I mean, we control our internal affairs, but any changes in how we operate. And so Chapel Hill, North Carolina, received permission and ran their city council election last fall under
mm-hmm.
with a public financing plan. And it's really creative. If you opt into the plan, there was a certain amount of money that you were given. You had to raise some on your own to establish your viability.
Viability,
you
have 100, right.
100 donors of $10
okay.
each. And then you could get into the system and you were provided with money. And if any of your opponents ran outside the system,
mm-hmm.
the plan would guarantee to keep up. So
matching, yeah.
Only
right.
Yeah,
they have that in this state, by the way.
Oh, good, great. Anyway, we're
yeah.
aiming for that. And Asheville, I've already got, we're moving forward toward being able to do that in Asheville. And I hope
mm-hmm.
we'll be able to move that direction. Because it's crazy. I mean, it's just, in 2 years ago, one candidate raised something like $70,000 for us in a city race for a seat that paid $11,800 a year.
The amount of money people raise to run for office, one of the reasons it doesn't bear logical relationships to the pay is because they're not, first off, it's not their own money. But additionally, it's not related to the pay. Someone is running for office because of desire for power, desire for fame, desire to accomplish something, to, you know, to put a finer light on it, or a desire to achieve higher office at a later time, obviously.
Right.
Which is where I was going with my question about how long the term is. Are you planning now, or is it too early to know if you're planning to run for re-election or if you have other plans?
I can imagine running again. I haven't really thought very hard about it at this point. I think in a, you know, a year or so, I'll have a sense of whether I feel like my time is worth it. I really, the core issue that I was really running on was transparency and openness in government. That's what, as a reporter for many years,
sure,
I felt like things were often hidden from the public. And so that was a motivation for me. I happen to have a very green agenda. I think we're in desperately bad trouble. I think we're facing a peak oil problem that's going to have ramifications throughout our society, and the communities that are ready to face it will do much better than communities that aren't ready. So there's that. I think the war on drugs is an absolute sham. I think we really need to totally rethink that. I think we're destroying families and communities. And
costing ourselves a fortune.
And costing us a fortune while we funnel trillions of dollars of illegal cash across borders.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's affecting our balance of payments. I've got some agenda items that I'm interested in, but more than anything else, it's this transparency and exposing, you know, letting the sunlight in. And if
right.
I feel like I'm doing some of that, it isn't that I need to be right about any particular issue as much as that I want to be right about opening government. So I might run for re-election, and it's conceivable to me that I might run for higher office, but I'm 59 years old. I'm not looking toward a political career as such. I mean,
yeah.
Mostly I believe in public service. I think that to the extent that each of us can, we should step up, whether it's a school board, whether it's a board or commission. We ought to jump in there, because if we're going to be a government by the people need to be
people
there.
People have to govern.
Yeah.
It's a logical requirement of language, if nothing else.
Right, right. And frankly, after spending my last much of my time over about 8 months last year running for office, I'm not in any way eager to run for office.
Understood. The other point for you to consider, especially if you do later hold higher offices, the other way you can eliminate or grossly limit the amount of campaigning that has to be done by members of the House and the Senate is if you, and this is, again, the broad topic I was avoiding, which is to eliminate the income tax in favor of some other tax mechanism like a sales tax with certain limitations. Because one of the primary reason that corporate, not the only one, but the primary reason corporations and other people, it's not a left-right kind of thing, but the primary reason they make these humongous contributions or make films right before the election, as the case may be, is so they can get tax advantages. And if you didn't have an income tax for corporations or for individuals, that problem would no longer exist. So you would have less corruption. Yeah.
For instance, I think a carbon tax as one, or a value-added tax,
right.
Both of those have great...
They would work, depending on how you did it. And the reason I'm
exactly.
being brief in a response to you is because we've got about a minute left, probably more like 90 seconds. there it is.
Yeah.
There's the announcement that came just through my ear, 90 seconds. So I guess at this point I ought to just thank you very much, and I really do appreciate you joining us. Where you are, it is now coming up on 11:30. So you've made the supreme sacrifice, as it were, and really appreciate
yeah.
it.
Especially
good luck.
I'm a 4 a.m. person, so this is big.
Yeah. Okay, well, in that case, I'll shut up. I'll let you go. Cecil, thanks very much. Good luck. I'm glad you were able to take office, and I wish you all the best.
Thanks so much. I'd love to get back on your show a year from now and talk about how it went.
I'd love to do that as well. Thanks again.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay, Cecil. Take care. Bye-bye. And that was Cecil Bothwell, city council member of Asheville, North Carolina. I hope you enjoyed that interview. We are about out of time, but if you would join us next week, Same bat time, same bat station. You would honor us and make me thrilled. Want to thank everyone who's joined us. And also would thank my producer, Autumn Bushman, but she left the room right about 7:05 or 7:35 here. So she's getting her tummy rubbed and is probably getting a treat right about now. In any event, thanks again. Join us next week. Have a great week. Bye-bye.